Welcome back, everybody, to the episode of the Dave Stevens Podcast, part of the Off the Ball Network. This is episode 202, dedicated to a man who on June 7th, 1989, won his ninth Most Valuable Player Award in 10 years. Mr. Wayne Gretzky. And as always, thank you for listening and downloading another episode of the podcast. On today's episode, we talk a little bit about Coach K retiring at the end of next season. Danny Ainge steps down, Brad Stevens gets promoted, and John Rahm gets disqualified while he has a six-stroke lead. But first, this offseason in the NFL has been dominated by four people. One, Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson said, I want out of town. I want out of Houston. I am disgruntled. This organization is very dysfunctional. There's a lot of things going on here that I don't like. You let my favorite receiver, my boy, go from Houston to Arizona. I'm not happy. But we quickly realized, or quickly it was emerged, it was exposed, part of the reason that Deshaun Watson was disgruntled down there in Texas. Russell Wilson. After getting sacked, I don't know how many times, but there was way too many sacks that he had last year, and the Seattle Seahawks not putting the proper offensive line in front of him to protect their star quarterback, he was upset as well. Disgruntled. Now, I have heard rumblings, and there have been reports that he is still... A trade may happen, but if it doesn't, okay. Not the end of the world. It's Seattle. They'll figure it out. There's also Aaron Rodgers. In the Aaron Rodgers situation, it's very interesting because if you look back at the track record of the Packers, they've had a lot of success. Not Super Bowl appearances. They've had a lot of success lately. But when you're Aaron Rodgers, just coming off of an MVP season, and you are not just the face of the franchise, you are a star quarterback in the National Football League still, even at the upper age that you are for tenure in the NFL and really age-wise in the NFL, you are still a dog. You're still a killer and somebody that nobody wants to see you operating the opposing offense. Yeah, you're that guy and you would hope that the team would make some things happen for you. He might not be there in Green Bay. I think there might be some reconciliation or coming together of the heads and making things work for Aaron Rodgers, because I'm not trying to let Aaron Rodgers leave via free agency or not free agency, but via a trade. Nah, not trying to have that happen at all. But then there's Julio Jones. And Julio Jones said he wants to play for a winner. We heard the phone call, or maybe you watched a clip like I did, of the phone call that he had live on air with Shannon Sharpe. And he says, I want to play for a winner, but I'm not going to Dallas. Of course, winning Dallas Cowboys is in the 80s and early 90s. They ain't done a lot of winning there in Dallas for, it's been a very long time. My goodness, what's this, 95? My goodness, it's been a while since they've had any success there down there in Texas. But Julio Jones comes up and says, well, guys, I went out. I'm going to go to a winner. First two teams that come to my mind where they were the two teams that were in the Super Bowl last year. Buccaneers, Chiefs. Does he fit in either offense? I don't know. I think he fits more in Tampa Bay's offense than he does in Kansas City's. But neither one of those teams put a trade out. If they did put a trade out, it didn't go through. Julio Jones to the Tennessee Titans. Ryan Tannehill, A.J. Brown, Derrick Henry. Okay, good. Is this going to be another situation where you have a lot of skill positions, a lot of skill players, but the offensive line in front, the battle in the trenches, the Titans aren't winning, and we're going to look back at this point in time and say, well, what do we say? What did we say in June? Beginning of June, what did we say about this trade? It's a good move for, is it a good move for Julio? Who's the better quarterback, Matt Ryan or Ryan Tannehill? I mean, some will say Matt Ryan. I think Ryan Tannehill is limited. You take away a play action pass or variations off of that, what do you get with a quarterback that is Ryan Tannehill? A starter, nothing special, but you get a starting quarterback in the NFL that is limited. I mean, he's limited already, but his limitations are even more when you take away that play action pass out of the playbook. The Titans, though, this is a spark. Now this is a team that's not fully prepared for a long run, 17 games plus a postseason, because of just the current construction of the roster. They still have some holes there. But Julio, you want to win. Tennessee, you got your man. You got a receiver on one side. You got a receiver on the other. You got Derrick Henry, who's going to try and get 2,000 rushing yards. You got Ryan Tannehill, who is going to try to replicate the success they had last year and go a little bit further. Hey, we'll see what happens. But Julio to Tennessee, it's great. But do I think that this is a great formula for Julio to do what he wants to do when? I don't think so. Let's go ahead and take a trip to North Carolina because a legend, a literal legend in the game, has decided to hang things up at the end of next season. What were you doing in 1975? Yeah, a long time ago now, wasn't it? And you're probably thinking in your head, Jay, what was I doing in 1975? What was on my mind? A lot of you, like myself, weren't even born yet. My dad, who is the man that helped me get into sports, my dad and my mom. I believe my mom was still in high school. I believe my dad was in his freshman or sophomore year at Indiana State University. My mom may have been at Indiana University at that time, but that's my parents. Myself, I'm the oldest in my family. My brother is younger than me, 3 years younger, so neither one of us were alive at this time. My parents weren't even together at that time with 1975. But in 1975, Coach K was just coaching in his first game as the head coach, head basketball coach at Army. We hear all about Duke and what he has done, the success he's had at Duke, but it all started the 1975-76 season when he was the head basketball coach at Army. Not just one season, but 5. 11-14, 20-8, 19-9, 14-11, and then 9-17 in his last year. That was their first year when they were members of the Eastern Collegiate Athletic Conference Metro season. That's the first Eastern Collegiate Athletic Conference Metro. That was the name of the conference I'm reading on my phone. And when I'm reading, of course, there's more things that are on the screen than what needs to come out of my mouth. But 9-17, first year in a conference, and many people were wondering, and you're probably saying to yourself, that's not a good coach. Nothing he's doing there screams, let's get another job. No, it does not at all. 9-17 in his last year, coached in 26 games. And if you were to look back at that time, that first 5 years that he was a coach in college basketball as a head coach there, you're probably thinking, Jay, was he over 500 any? 3 years in a row. What did he do in the postseason? Nothing at all. So why in the world is Coach K revered and looked at as this amazing coach? Someone that you could look at and you could say, you could model what he did and have success with it. Because when you go to Duke, and at this time Duke was not the basketball team that everybody thinks about and says, ooh, Duke basketball, a blue blood. That's not the Duke Blue Devils. If you were to look back at Duke basketball before Coach K got there, they were not the team that everybody is saying, ooh, yeah, Duke basketball, we can do exactly what they're doing. I mean, you look at it now, you got North Carolina, how they have transitioned after some great coaches. You can look at Kansas. You can look, don't look at Indiana. I know I say a lot about Indiana, but don't look at them. They've had a hard time trying to do what Bob Knight did after they fired him. Don't do that. You can look at looking at college football. The talk of the town. Nick Saban just signed an extension that actually just came up as I'm recording here. 3-year extension. He's now under contract through the 2028 season. I do expect that to be the year that Nick Saban does retire. But Alabama football before Nick Saban wasn't that hot. Ohio State football. Now, granted, they have a long track record. But before Jim Tressel, John Cooper was not somebody that people really talk about in a great light. Now, he was not a bad coach, but he's not on the level of a Tressel, of a Meyer, or a Day. USC football. After Pete Carroll, what has USC football been? It hasn't been that hot. So if you're going to sit here and say, well, Jay, it's Duke. They were good. They were good at basketball. They were decent. They had some 21 seasons. But Duke basketball, before Coach K got there, was not exactly what you would say was a a team that you would laugh at, a team that you would look at and say, ooh, I'm nervous. I don't want to play them. I don't want to touch that team. I'll go to some years right in front of me now. Some records right before Coach K got there in Duke. 73-74 season, 10-16, the 12-14 previous. I'm going backwards now. 14-12. A 21 season, 20-10 in 1970-71. And then 17-9, 15-13, 22-6, 18-9. Nothing here screams, ooh, yeah, they're going to be amazing. They're going to be a team that I'm scared to play, scared to lose. They had a couple. They did have some chances. They did actually end up going to some deep tournament runs. But Duke did not have a national championship win prior to Coach K getting there. Imagine a blue blood in college basketball. A coach in Coach K who really didn't have a lot of success there while he was coaching at Army. All of a sudden, he gets to Duke, 17-13, 10-17, 11-17, and it's making people wonder, did Duke make the right hire? Because these numbers, these records, the success they're having, there were no tournament appearances in his first three seasons. He didn't get his first tournament win until his fifth or sixth year actually at the school. Think about that happening now nowadays in today's landscape and the way that things are ran today. I do think there's a leash that is way too short on coaches, on players, on GMs, on presidents of basketball operation, of athletic directors. I think the leash is way too short. But imagine if Coach K coached in today. If Coach K was a guy that's coaching and he just got a start at Army, went 5 years with those records, got a head coaching job at Duke in today's current landscape. If everything was the same, I don't know if Coach K lasts as long at Duke as he did back then, because I try my best not to be like this, but too many people are way too quick to say, hey, we're throwing the towel on that guy. He's not doing what we expected of him. We're not going to allow him to have more time here. Nope, we're going to throw in the towel, get rid of him, forget that. Coach K is a product, one, of time that the AD had at that time with Coach K, but two, he is also a product of just trusting the process and learning as he goes. Yes, everybody remembers the 92 Duke team with the Christian Laettner shot where I think he went 10 for 10. He had 22 points, 10 for 10 from the foul line, or 10 for 10 from the field goal. Grant Hill had the phenomenal one-handed pass, three-quarter court pass. Was it 2.2 seconds left on the clock? Christian Laettner was doing all these moves, and people were thinking, hey, bro, you can't do all of this. You don't have all the time in the world to make this happen. And what does he do? He makes a shot, go on. I believe they beat Kentucky in that game. And that was not the final game. They had to go on to win another game to at least win the national championship that year. If you were to go back and look at Duke rosters, and I'm going to do something very quickly. Let's go to 97-98. You look at this roster here. There's five pros on the team. Rashawn McLeod, Trajan Langdon, who is, I think, someone that people forgot how good he was at the basketball. William Avery, Elton Brand, and then Shane Battier. But most people remember that 98-99 Duke team with Elton Brand, Trajan Langdon again as a senior, who ended up averaging 17-4. Elton Brand averaged 17-9 as a sophomore in basketball. William Avery, Corey Maggette, and then also Shane Battier. Many people remember that team there for how great, how amazing, how enjoyable it was to watch them play the basketball. The very next year, 99-2000, another tournament run. They lose in the Sweet 16 that is Duke, but Coach K had these years where he had so much great talent from Shane Battier, Jay Williams, Carlos Boozer, Mike Dunleavy. Growing up, when I was a kid, Mike Dunleavy's dad was a coach of the Portland Trailblazers. When Mike Dunleavy's dad was coaching guys like Brian Williams with the dreadlocks, Rasheed Wallace, Arvydas Sabonis, Detlef Schrempf, Damon Stoudemire, Bonzi Wells, Scottie Pippen. Yes, this whole team had all these players together, and they couldn't get past the Los Angeles Lakers. And for Coach K not to just transition from the early days at Duke, where the success was not there, but the AD and everybody kept with Coach K to get the success that he had with Laettner, with Bobby Hurley, John Shire later on, we're going to get to him in a couple minutes, to Jay Williams, to Elton Brand, Trajan Langdon, and so many other athletes that Coach K had, Mike Dunleavy, Shane Battier, to going to what he's currently had, I mean, think about the Justice Winslows that he had, and was it Julius Randle, and all the other athletes that Coach K has had to not only go from the 80s basketball, mid-80s, to the 90s, when I think college basketball was at its height, at its peak, late 80s, early 90s, when college basketball was really that dude when it came to sporting events, it was really that thing. Yes, the Final Four is always going to be sold out. I get that. But if you go back to the 90s and watch that college basketball, how intense, how fierce these rivalries were, I mean, think about it. You got UConn, and Georgetown. You got Ray Allen versus Allen Iverson in the 90s. Yes, I understand. These are not just college legends. These are also gentlemen that were great at the NBA as well, future Hall of Famers. You're going up against greats every single night. Nowadays, you look at the college basketball, you're not sure if the guy you're watching as a leading scorer on the team that you love is going to be able to be a second-round pick, let alone even be a decent NBA player. The 90s, the 80s, college basketball was crazy. And Coach K transformed from the 80s to the 90s to the peak of college basketball, at least from what I've looked at lately, to the 2000s, to the one-and-done era. And this one-and-done era, it's a hard thing to swallow. A lot of coaches have not been able to transition to the one-and-done era. It isn't new. It's been around for a while. Coach Calipari, as much as he has done, he's done a lot with the talent that he's had, and he's put a lot of talent into the NBA, got a lot of guys drafted very, very quickly via the one-and-done system. But then Coach K has to deal with the transfer portal. I don't know if Coach K is going to say this, but I think the transfer portal, more than the one-and-done situation in college basketball, is part of the reason why he is stepping down now. But forget when he decides to step down. Coach K is a guy. It doesn't matter if you're a North Carolina fan, if you're a Wake Forest fan, NC State, any of the teams that are rivals, in-state rivals with Duke, or if you're a fan of another team in college basketball, say Kansas or Kentucky or Indiana, Arizona, or whoever you're a fan of. You could be an old school Arkansas fan as well. Whoever you're a fan of, you can't look at Coach K's career and say, this guy, what he did, it wasn't good. It wasn't amazing. Nah, not at all. No, forget Coach K. Coach K is a guy, trust me, he's a legend. You're going to hear a lot of talk about Coach K here lately, not just from me, but from many people around college basketball, around sports. Because Mike Krzyzewski, you look at his day, you're trying to figure out how in the world do you do that? 1,097 wins, 302 losses from coaching at Army, playing at Army as well, point guard at Army, shooting guard, coached with Bob Knight for 1 year as an assistant from 74 to 75 before taking the head job at Army. Overall head coaching record. I don't know what record I read earlier. Oh, that was a Duke coaching record. That's amazing. 1,097 wins, 302 losses. But overall record, over 1,100 wins, 1,170 wins, 361 losses. His record in the tournament, 97-30. 2-2 in the NIT, 63-21 in ACC tournament play. Coach K is a guy of 5 national championships, 12 NCAA regional Final Fours, 15 ACC tournament wins, 12 ACC regular season wins, Naismith Coach of the Year, NABC Coach of the Year, Claire B. Coach of the Year, UPI Coach of the Year. I could keep going on 5-time Coach of the Year in the ACC. With other accolades there that I did not list off, Coach K, salute, hand clap. I'm just oh so glad. That one, you have one more year to coach. You're going to get a proper send-off. And then two, you're keeping it in the family and hiring John Shire, a man that won a national championship while he was playing under Coach K at Duke. Good old Danny Ainge decides, just like Coach K, to hang it up. But different than Coach K, Danny Ainge is hanging it up. Right now, and I've listened to a podcast. It was Ryan Rosillo, Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer, Bill Simmons, and Jackie McMullen. And I believe Jackie McMullen and Kevin O'Connor, they said, based off the things that they have heard and people they have talked to, they said this announcement isn't really a surprise. There have been rumblings and rumors that this would be happening soon, if not now. So them hearing or this happening now isn't a surprise to those in the know, those that are right there in Boston that have a lot of the connections. People like myself and others that aren't, like, say, in the know or don't have those connections in the Boston area, trust me, this is really a surprise. But I can't really say that it's going in the wrong direction. Think about this. Danny Ainge, the GM, we can go to the player, played in the NBA from 81 to 95, won some championships there with the Boston Celtics, played for the Celtics, the Kings, the Trailblazers, the Suns. He was a coach in Phoenix, which I didn't really remember, from 96 to 99. Just shows how irrelevant or how much success or lack thereof that was going on there in Phoenix in the latter part of the 90s. But Danny Ainge, two-time NBA champion, was an NBA All-Star in 1988, the John R. Wooden Award winner in 81, and there's so many other accolades that I can list off here. But him as a GM, not only a champion as a player with the Celtics, a champion also as an executive with the Celtics, the 2008 National NBA Championship that the Celtics ended up winning. He also an executive of the year as well. And people keep looking at the short term, looking at a snapshot, looking and getting tunnel vision and saying, oh, the past 3 years or the past 5 years, how has Danny Ainge done? And people look out here and they say, Danny, I like what you did, but you didn't have the success. And people forget to look at the totality of a man's tenure at that specific situation and at that specific job and say, here's how we can judge you. Here's how we can grade what you did at the job with that particular team. I would not say Danny Ainge's job in Boston was a failure. I would not say Danny Ainge's job in Boston was something that you can say, we can't take anything from that. There are no positives. There is all negatives. I am not going that far. I think going that far would be crazy, would be a little weird. I would say idiotic. But if you go and look back to what the Celtics were early 2000s, early to mid 2000s, you say, yes, Jay, they had Antoine Walker. They had Paul Pierce. They had a lot of players. Antoine Walker in 2005, 2006, he was on the Miami Heat. And he got him an NBA championship before Paul Pierce did. And I don't think anybody out there would go out and say, well, Jay, Antoine Walker's going to get a ring before Paul Pierce, because everybody knew, even in Boston, in Miami, around the league, it was a known fact, Paul Pierce is the better basketball player than Antoine Walker. So getting rid of Antoine Walker, that's amazing. And then you bring in a guy, Rajon Rondo, and then you bring in Hall of Famers in Ray Allen and Kevin Garnett. So everybody also wants to say, oh, it's a big three that LeBron has, or the Warriors, they got this big three. If you want to look back, big threes and teams teaming up, they have been a thing in the NBA for a very, 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 very long time. You want to talk about big threes, the Boston Celtics of Bird, Mikal, and Parrish. If you want to look back and watch those guys play basketball, three HOFers as themselves, or you want to go to the Lakers, Magic, Kareem, and James Worthy. Oh, you want to go a little bit further? I can go to the 90s. Jordan had Jordan, Pippen, and Rodman. Now, you could say, Jay, it was different. Those guys, their NBA was different. Was it? I'm not a person that's going to go out here and say that the big three argument of LeBron saying LeBron started this is accurate. It's actually pretty false. It's just different in the way that LeBron constructed it because, well, media's different in the late part of 2000s, early 2010s than it was in the 90s, the 80s, and the 70s. You can even go back to Bill Russell and the Celtics, who had five Hall of Famers in their starting lineup. Imagine that happening today. You probably watch the First Take. You probably watch the Undisputed, or you may listen to sports talk radio shows like myself, or listen to podcasts like this one, where the host is saying, oh, please, no, that's wrong. Five Hall of Famers on one roster, they would tear that GM apart. But Danny Ainge, going back to that Celtics team, that Celtics team went from having no success to immediate success. Like that. And I'm all about giving credit to whom credit is due. And Danny Ainge is a big, big, big piece, a big part of that success that the Celtics had. Now, shipping those Celtics off and Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce, shipping them off to Brooklyn or New, I think it was maybe New Jersey at the time, or Brooklyn. I think it was Brooklyn because I believe they had the New Jersey's new arena, Jay-Z's involvement, all that jazz. Ray Allen going down to Miami, that's still controversial because, you know, players are going to view things in a certain way. He didn't tell me. We didn't talk about things. I get it. It's a business. Things happen. But Danny Ainge, the GM, I think too many people look at the snapshot of what he did over the past 3 to 4 years and say, well, Danny, yeah, not a fan at all. We don't like how you did things over the past few years, didn't have the success, so you were a failure there in Boston. Him as a failure, think that would be a bad way to assess the tenure that he had there as the GM, as the executive in Boston. But not only is he stepping down, I think you got to go a little bit further and talk about Brad Stevens stepping up. Brad Stevens getting promoted, I don't think this is a bad situation. Boston, as we have known, sometimes certain franchises want to keep things in the family. Bill Russell was the first player coach, and he's actually going into the Hall of Fame next year, or maybe it's later this year, as a coach as well. One thing we say about LeBron, well, LeBron coaches. LeBron's a player coach. No, LeBron is a player who happens to coach a little bit while he's out there. But so many of the other greats do. He is not the coach, the head coach of the team, who is answering questions via press conferences, not only as a player, but also as a coach. LeBron is not doing that. I don't know if I think in today, if a player was a player coach, and let's just say it was LeBron. I'm not going to knock LeBron as a person or as a player. I'm just going to be honest with you. I don't know if LeBron, Kobe, Michael, Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, the guys we're talking about lately, Dwayne Wade, Shaquille O'Neal, I don't know if they can handle both head coaching duties and playing duties as the leader and the focal piece of their team. Now, I do believe this happened later on in Bill Russell's career. He was not the main piece as he was at that time, but he was a leader on the team. As a leader of a team, it's very, 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 very hard to control the locker room via pregame and control the ball when you're on the court, control timeouts, control practices, control everything. Very, very difficult. Think about it. You're a parent. You have 3 kids. You're married. You're a head coach and a leader of a basketball team. In today's current climate, I don't know how easy that is. So it does give a whole lot more attention to how amazing it was that a former Celtic and Bill Russell was able to do that. I believe it was back in the 70s when he was a player coach. But Brad Stevens getting promoted, I don't mind it either. I think one thing we know about Brad Stevens is he's a smart guy. Unfortunately, I don't think he was clicking, and with the current players that are on the Celtics, couldn't really get over that hump. And the one thing I hope Brad Stevens does, I hope Brad Stevens hires the right guy. I hope Brad Stevens utilizes the pieces around him to bring somebody in that can help him be successful early on, so he is not finding himself on the outside looking in and compared to other players, other people that are getting promoted and saying, well, Brad, got promoted. You didn't do too hot. Maybe it was a bad hire. No, maybe some people just aren't up to the task and can't do the job like you think they should or like you think they would. From Brad Stevens, no, excuse me. There is a theme before I go from Brad Stevens to the next final topic of the day. There is a theme of today's show that I did not think about when I put this show together. Julio Jones moves to a new team. Coach K will be moving out of college basketball as the head coach at Duke after next season. John Shire will be moving over one seat in college basketball there at Duke. Danny Ainge moving home. Brad Stevens moving up in the organization. And then John Rahm moving all the way out of the Memorial Tournament. Saturday evening, I had a couple options. Go to a state track meet or go to a semi-pro football game. the semi-pro football game. I actually had an invitation to someone that's a part of the that team there, said, hey, you should come to our first game. It's here. Here's how much it costs to get in. I said, sure, because they have to rent the field. I said, sure, not a problem. I'll go. Went to the game. It was a blowout. You know, your boy doesn't really stay for blowouts. So the rest is history. You could probably think about how early Jay went. I won't tell you. You can speculate amongst yourselves. So I went ahead and did that. And then I was going to go to the girls' state track meet. That was a closer drive than going to the football game. But your boy loves football. So be it. But while I'm at the football game, I believe this was during a timeout, I looked at my phone, and lo and behold, Adam Schefter put a tweet out. And it was not a tweet about football, because I was anticipating maybe something about Julio Jones. Honestly, the Julio Jones information or the thought that he'd be moving, it's there, but I didn't really know when it would happen. So I said, okay, cool, Adam Schefter tweet on my phone. Let's go ahead and read what it says. And I'm going to read this word for word, the tweet that Adam Schefter tweeted out. It's not a football tweet. Is something you would probably not expect Shefty to tweet about. Here's the tweet. Quote, after John Rahm finished the third round of the Memorial Tournament with a six-stroke lead, PGA Tour officials told him he had tested positive for COVID and would be forced to withdraw, end quote. Here I am thinking it's June, first weekend in June in 2021, and I'm thinking we're not going to go back in time or go backwards in regards to what is happening here. But we are. Vaccinations, as everybody's been pushing them. Everybody's saying, vaccinated, vaccinated, vaccinated. Get your vaccine, get your vaccine, get your vaccine. Oh, we're going to get back to normal. Oh, we're going to get back to normal. Oh, here's what we're going to have to do. We're going to get back to normal. But in a sport like golf, you would not think the thing that happens in team sports, the basketball, the college football, the college basketball, the NBA, the NFL, I may have said NBA previously, you would have thought this might not actually happen. Yes, people pushing all of these things on you, making you seem like, making it seem to many people, we're not going to go backwards, we're moving forward. Our country is moving forward, full steam ahead. We're ready to go. We're perfectly fine. Wrong. Even in a team sport, the officials followed the rules. And I got to say, I got to give them kudos to them for following the rules that are put in place. So I don't believe all these other sports are following the same rules, even though they're the ones pushing. A lot of them are pushing vaccine, vaccine, vaccine. We're moving forward, full steam ahead. We're all systems ago. We're going forward, and we're not trying to look back at 2020. No. PGA Tour officials say no. We hear what everybody's saying. We hear what the president's saying. We hear what's on TV, but we still have our rules. We still have to follow the things that are set in place. I got to give them kudos for that because that's very, very hard. But in a sport like golf, unlike football, where last year the World Series, I believe David Turner was told he had to leave in the sixth or seventh inning because of a positive test, leaves the game, comes back on the field to celebrate. People are saying, how are you going to be on the field to celebrate when you have a positive test? Major League Baseball, you should be ashamed for yourself. Let's just be honest now. Many players play baseball, never get a World Series win. So if he's going to go out there and celebrate, it's him at his own risk with his teammates. We see. It's A-okay. So David Turner went out there to celebrate. You saw last year in college football, some teams missed 20 to 25 players in a game, in one game, due to positive tests. You saw NFL games get postponed. They played all the games, though. This got a little bit postponed. They kept pushing back and pushing back and pushing back. I believe it was Steelers and Ravens, middle of the season. One game, I remember the Browns didn't have some players. No. Y'all don't have Lamar Jackson. Y'all got to play right away. The Steelers and Ravens, we're going to wait until Lamar Jackson has cleared so he can play, you know, kind of double standards. But it's what we have grown to get accustomed to when watching the sports. In a sport like golf, unlike a team sport, you would think that the PGA Tour officials would have said, hey, John Rahm, you can continue to play. Just don't be around anybody. It's you yourself. You're carrying your own bags. So be it. No assistance from your caddy, nothing. You yourself, that's it. But the PGA Tour officials stuck to their guns, stuck to their rules, and didn't deviate from that, no matter what people said. Even though I don't really agree with the way that the PGA Tour has handled this, and I think there could have been some tweaking in real time, kind of the letter of the law versus the spirit of the law, that kind of mindset, I gotta give them kudos and props. You have a rule, you stuck with your rule, and the rest is history. Yeah, it's very unpopular. It's shocking. Something that could have been worked around. But I got to give somebody in the day in which we live for sticking to what the rules are and following through with the rule when a rule is broken. Thank you guys so much for listening and downloading another episode of the Jay Stevens Podcast. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at jstevens07. You can also send all of your emails to jstevenspod@gmail.com. Remember to always subscribe, rate, and review. It's a great way for people that are searching for a new podcast to listen to come across this one. Then remember to always get the word out about the podcast via word of mouth. The things that we enjoy in life, we are almost willing and somewhat wired to tell other people about. So no matter if this was your first episode or if you have been listening since episode number one, be sure to let people know about the podcast. This has been episode 202 of the Jay Stevens Podcast. I will see you next time.